three together?
Yeah, however you want to try to do that. I'm sure Mr. Rogers would probably like to address this.
Would you like to address the commission?
On which one? Oh.
We're going to take the next three together.
Okay. Yes, I would, please.
Sure.
Secretary Hepler, commissioners, I appreciate very much the opportunity to speak to you today. I've also got Mr. Wyatt Skelton, who's the vice president of the South Dakota Bowhunters. I'm the secretary of the South Dakota Bowhunters, so he's going to give me a little moral support up here and correct me if I'm wrong on anything. First, I've already talked a little bit about the overall archery deer on public lands and the limited access unit petition that we've asked for a change on. I've gone through some of this already. Not going to try to say that there's overabundance of pressure on every single piece of public land on the state of South Dakota. I'm not saying that. But we do have factual data. It is not anecdotal. It is factual data from the Game, Fish, and Parks statistics. I want to make that clear on these numbers. Resident firearm hunters have to wait several years to accrue preference points on many of these areas, particularly Black Hills, any deer, on the grasslands, on the Missouri River Corridor counties, East and West River, also the Custer National Forest. I brought forth some statistics on that, and there are also quite a few statistics on some public parcels as well east of the Missouri River. My testimony, I wanted to highlight on this particular one, was that 667 individual residents obtained LAU permits on all LAU areas in 2017. We don't have the stats on the Black Hills yet because that was just implemented last year. But there were also 366 individual non-residents. Individual hunter success rate was the same for both residents and non-residents on those LAUs, 33%. But if you look deeper into the Game, Fish, and Parks factual statistics, that resident LAU archery permit holders took 72 mule deer bucks, while non-residents, again, roughly half the number, took more. They took 79 mule deer bucks on those limited access units. Non-residents also took 16 does, mule deer does, and residents only took 7 mule deer does. Looking at an all-encompassing LAU archery harvest, the permit holders took a total of 134 total deer if they were non-residents, and residents took 284 total deer on those LAUs. So to summarize, the involving those statistics on LAUs in total, you would see that 35% of all LAU permits were held by non-residents. If we had an 8% extrapolation, which we do in firearms in the Black Hills and the refuge deer and the West River rifle permits, what they should have had was 53 non-resident LAU permits. Instead, what they wound up was 55%. Now, those numbers may not sway anybody's opinion, but if you look at the projected harvest and what a rifle hunter has to do in the same areas and how long they have to wait, perhaps it will. Resident bow hunters on the Custer National Forest took 20 mule deer bucks, while non-residents took 31 mule deer bucks on 35L or the Custer National Forest. During that same 2017 season, all rifle hunters, residents and non-residents combined, took 89 mule deer bucks on 35L. There were 125 residents and 10 non-resident rifle permits. That year in 2017, 506 residents had two or more preference points vying for those 125 permits. So at least 2 years minimum, our resident rifle hunters are waiting to get that permit, but a non-resident can come in each and every year currently. In the Black Hills, the harvest in 2017 was 86 mule deer bucks for all firearm hunters. In 2017, there were 1,079 resident applicants with two or more preference points looking for those 100 non-landowner resident licenses. Of course, there were also 100 landowner licenses, but the public is looking at 100, and they're waiting a very long time. During that season, the projected archery mule deer harvest in the Black Hills was 47 mule deer. I can tell you factually that I waited 8 years for that permit, that firearms permit, and the largest mule deer I saw in the Black Hills was a yearling 3-point, which I was not about to shoot. So our residents are getting hammered on some of these areas. Any way you look at this data, you can clearly see that non-resident bow hunters are harvesting a significant and disproportionate amount of our mule deer on our large public parcels. When you compound that with the fact that resident firearms hunters are all waiting several years to draw these coveted permits, I feel that is a clear mandate for you as the commission and the staff to take action to preserve our quality of experience and the quality of our mule deer. Do you have anything to add, Wyatt?
I think you got it pretty good. Every year I hunted out in northwest South Dakota, and last year there was a lot more pressure out there, and talking to friends that know people out there said they have never seen pressure last fall on the bow hunting side of things, especially. Overall, it was up. But with that earlier start date, everybody thought, well, South Dakota is the cheapest state, and you're guaranteed the ability to shoot a mule deer. We were just hammered. So I think we need to do some structuring on that.
Yes, if I could. Is there any questions on that particular subject? Okay. I will move on to the next South Dakota bow hunters petition. This is a petition for non-resident archery mule deer validation permit. We've talked about it a little bit earlier. South Dakota's, we have a rare and valuable opportunity. We offer unlimited non-resident archery permits for any deer. We have a good mule deer population and a comparatively low-priced non-resident permit. We South Dakotans live and raise our families here because of the quality of life. That often directly correlates to the hunting and fishing opportunities. You're not going to find another state that offers unlimited archery permits statewide for any deer, including mule deer and antelope. We're the only state that does it. Nebraska offers unlimited deer, and they have mule deer, but they don't have the public land that we have. All other western states, all other states with similar opportunities, they have limits. You cannot hunt the whole state. You cannot hunt the whole season. And most of them, as you'll see later, charge a much higher premium than we do. No one involved in any of these petitions is ever suggesting eliminating non-resident hunting. That is not what we're asking. We're asking to remove the unlimited tag, and we're asking to set reasonable limits to protect our herds and the quality of experience for resident bow hunters. Talking to people with long-term first-hand accounts, those are anecdotal, about the overabundance of non-resident archers on public tracks, as well as sites of what they're harvesting. If you'll talk to those people, you see that you know, non-residents, they come, they spend money, and it's a vacation for them, and it's a trip, and that's wonderful. I do similar type things as a non-resident, but I hunt under their rules. I can't hunt the whole state. I typically pay much more. Many times, most times, I have to wait years to draw those permits, even archery permits. So when people come with an unlimited and they spend some money, they want to take something home. Oftentimes, that may not be what some would consider a quality animal. I'm not going to get too deep into that. That's a hunter's choice. But it's something to consider. These proposals are not without precedent. If you look at Kansas is a very, very similar situation when I'm talking about archery mule deer and having a limit for archery mule deer and the number of permits and having another stamp. Kansas does this exactly or very similarly to what I'm proposing. What they do is they require you to draw that non-resident archery license. It's a whitetail only. Then you enter the draw back in for a mule deer stamp. And those are extremely limited. I believe they were less than 130 total mule deer permits for archery non-residents last year. And I'll get to that later and confirm that. But they only offer about 120 of those stamps a year. That department, the Kansas Game and Fish Department, charges $442.50 just for the deer permit and $152.50 for that mule deer stamp. And they get plenty of applications, more than they have available. A similar process is also run in North Dakota, where they have a far lower number of mule deer permits, much more generous whitetail-only allocations for non-residents. North Dakota Game and Fish Department will allow more than I'm talking about. They'll, North Dakota will allow 502 mule deer permits after you draw that whitetail permit. And they also allow a lot of whitetails. So they have a formula that allocates 15%. Here in South Dakota, we currently have an 8% allocation. So that talks about some of the disparity. So when we're talking about a petition for archery mule deer, that would avail the commission the opportunity to maybe not restrict total numbers of permits so much. They may restrict some on public land, but then it would take the pressure off the mule deer if you, then you would offer up an opportunity to draw an additional mule deer stamp. It's my belief that most of these folks that come to our limited access units in the western part of the state from out of state, they are targeting mule deer. So you'd have to check all those numbers, but I've given you several already showing you in the Custer National Forest that even though there's only basically half the number of non-residents that hunt there, they shot more mule deer than residents did. And resident rifle hunters are waiting a minimum of 2 years to get that tag, if not more.
Yeah, I have friends like up in Harding County, and you know, a lot of them are really upset that it takes so many years to draw a rifle tag where they can hunt any deer. And some have voiced that, you know, we got so many people, they think it gets overrun.
If we do this, have you got one more? Could you do that really quickly? And I don't want to be rude or mean or anything, but we have so much to cover. I wanted you to be as efficient maybe as you can in your remarks.
Okay, well, that's two of the five. The next one is the overall permits and the breakdown. I probably need a little more time on that one. I could do archery antelope pretty quick, I think.
Well, we're trying to do these three in order, right? The yeah, let's do the third one, that, and then then Tony was going to come up and address those, and we can come back to the others.
All right, I'll do the best I can. This is the overall non-resident archery deer permit petition, which has numbers of permits in each one. The request that we're making, once again, once we opened the floodgates on that September 1st archery opener last year, the numbers have not been posted by Game and Fish yet, but I was told it was a significant increase in non-resident archery permit purchase. We'll find out when those are published. The increased number of non-residents has caused significant pressure and overcrowding on many public lands, and they have also harvested an increasing number of mule deer. With the numbers that I've talked about already, it would limit non-resident archers significantly on public land. In other words, we have put a petition in to limit and create four new units. East River Public, 250 non-resident permits. East River Private, 750 non-resident permits. West River Public, 250 non-resident permits. West River Private, 750 non-resident permits. All any whitetail. And that would dovetail into that mule deer stamp that we talked about earlier. That number of 2,000 is much higher than the 8% extrapolated number that is used for firearms. In 2017, the last number statistics are available, there were 19,510 resident archery license holders and 3,499 non-resident archery holders, which was 18%. The typical allocation is 8%. If we would have followed the rifle model for West River, Black Hills, and Refuge, there would have been a non-resident archery permit limit of 1,561. So the petition for 2,000 permits is far more generous than the 8% limit currently used on the rifle side. The discussion sometimes turns to the question of why limit private land permits at all. And all I'll say to that is that I would offer the vast majority of other states do limit them. They're not unlimited, particularly in the West where they have mule deer. They have to draw them. There are some states that do offer outfitter type reservations or names where they get a bump in the pole or the pool, and maybe that's something you want to consider. But most states do not allow unlimited permits. By not limiting them, we're encouraging privatization and commercialization of public trust resources. It's becoming increasingly difficult for resident hunters to find a good place to hunt. And if we continue to enable privatization through unlimited permits from non-residents who have a much higher disposable income number than South Dakota residents, we're doing a disservice to our resident hunters in our great state, in my opinion.
I agree with what Dana said there. It used to be when I was younger, you could go knock on any door and you archery hunting. Yeah, go ahead. You know, you're not going to do much damage. But anymore, there's more and more competition out there, for sure. Thank you.
And those would be the three, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Dana. And then we'll deal with these three and then come back. Tony?
Again, for those listening online, Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division. Mr. Chairman, I do believe that Mr. Rogers, and I didn't catch the other gentleman's name, did a good job of describing what these petitions do and their reasoning for bringing those. They are timely in a way, and just maybe just off in timing just a little bit, because as you recall, we just had a conversation about the resident, non-resident allocation. And certainly I think all of these three petitions that you're discussing at this point hit home with that conversation that was initiated earlier or late last year and is culminating here within the next month. I would remind the commission, at least those five of you that were here a year ago, that we did have a proposal in front of the commission that limited access to those public lands. And there's a valid concern there that needs to be addressed. We put that one on ice, again, in favor of a more comprehensive look at all license allocations, both resident and non-resident, again, with the process that Mr. Chairman, that you led with looking at the resident versus non-resident issue. But certainly all three of these petitions pertain to that issue that your work group has spent considerable time working on. I do have a handout here. Commissioner Sharp had asked for some data on the some of the licenses sold and some of the – thanks, Rachel – some of the associated revenue that comes from those. You will see on the archery deer page that, as the petitioners told you, there was an increase in the number of non-resident archery licenses that were sold this past year. The total number of licenses that were sold were just over 4,000 that were valid for any deer, plus another 400 that were valid for antlerless deer, for a total of 4,449. You'll see that on the third page. Richard, do we have an extra copy of that? The petitioners might want to be able to see what we're working off of, too.
Oh, where'd they go?
I believe calculations are correct. That would be a 16% increase in the number of non-resident archers that came and hunted deer in South Dakota. As I said, you know, they're timely that this conversation is going on right now, maybe a little premature based on the resident, non-resident conversation that is culminating here shortly. But ultimately, be happy to try to answer any questions you have for me or the petitioners, Mr. Chairman. But once again, your alternatives would be to accept any of these or each of these as proposals that we would include in the public comment, public notice, and take hearing or take public comment on during a hearing a month from now, or if it's your pleasure to reject the petition, we would certainly help you craft a resolution that would summarize the basis of that decision.
Do we need a motion to tie these together to start with? I mean, we have three petitions here. Do we need a motion to consider them all at one time, or can we address them all at once?
Mr. Chairman, and I'll defer to John Katilnik. I believe if you wanted to accept them all at once or reject them all at once, you could do that with one motion, but I believe you would need a separate resolution that would If it is a rejection, the separate resolution for each of those would probably be appropriate.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Commissioner Phillips, yeah, that would be the preferred method because each of these petitions were submitted individually. So to make the record clear, I'd recommend acting on each one separately. I wouldn't tie them together. Again, that way your rationale for either accepting or denying them is clear for each individual petition.
So three individual motions is what?
I think so. Okay.
Comments, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
You know, I think these petitioners bring valid concerns. I really think these are concerns that we have been talking about looking at for a long time. And we talked about their concerns maybe being premature. Well, maybe we should have been there already by now, too. Maybe we should have been there, but we're not. That being said, I want to do this in the proper time and as it should be done. And while I realize there's some real concerns here, I think we need to do the process, if you will. I think these are all good ideas. I think we need to look at them. I'd like the department to take a look at them and bring us something maybe more cohesive, something that we can look at and do the process as it should be done. I would move to reject these petitions as they are. Can we table them for 60? We can reject them. It's all or nothing. I would move to reject them. I don't know how I do that. Three different motions. I would move to reject all three of them.
Through the chair, Commissioner Phillips, you could certainly make the motion for all three petitions, citing your basis for the basis applies to all three petitions.
I would do that, and not because I don't think these issues are illegitimate. I think they are. I think they need to be looked at. I think we're ready to do this right now, aren't we? Aren't we ready to move into this archery issue very soon?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Phillips, we are. I think with the culmination of the resident, non-resident work group and the criteria being solidified here over the course of the next month, you can count on us working with the petitioners. Should these petitions be rejected as your motion states, to try to find that sweet spot on what the right recommendation would be, and we would bring that in front of you here within the next couple months.
If I can get a commitment from you then, Tony, to work with these petitioners, I would move to reject these three petitions.
There's a second. Commissioner Sharp.
Commissioner Sharp here. I would concur with Commissioner Phillips. Well-prepared, good information, but I would agree that it is a little bit premature. One of my concerns is that we have a tendency to piecemeal things together, and non-resident discussion is not only about deer, it's about every species that we have in the state. And so I think that just addressing this little bit of it is not going to get us to where we need to go. So as well intentioned and as well prepared as these are, I think we need to finish the non-resident work group discussion and criteria to get that hammered out before we move back into individual seasons. And that would be those my comments. And I would, having said that, I would second Commissioner Phillips' motion.
Any, Secretary Hepler?
Yeah. I hate to do it directly to take action, but I just want to be clear, Commissioner Phillips, going back what Commissioner Sharp just said, there's a number of ideas coming out from members of the public. It came out through the DEER plan, a lot of those interactions. It came out from your action group. There's all sorts of ideas what to do with non-residents, private land, you know, on public land. It goes all around it. And so our commitment, what I'm really hearing, what I'd rather hear, is that we're going to go out and we're going to take a complete look at all these options out there and provide that list back to you instead of just focusing on maybe these ones in front of us right now. It'd be all of them. And you may want to think, Mr. Chairman, is how do you get that complete list? Because I don't think that's ever been asked directly yet. We've always told the work group that's in the future. I know you're collecting some. I haven't been to all the meetings. I know you parking lot some of those. But I want to be sure, though, that when we move forward, we have all of those ideas in front of the commission. So we represent what the public's thinking, as well as we have all the options in front of you. And I think, Commissioner Phillips, that's consistent with conversations you and I have had behind the scenes. I was just trying to clarify that just for the record.
Yes, that's consistent with our conversations to come up with that. All the not all the comments, but all the discussions we've had in the past 2 years, and work with these petitioners also, and that's acceptable.
Any more discussion? Commissioner Locken.
Commissioner Locken, I'm wondering if we should have a little discussion about the very northwest part of the state. We keep hearing a lot of discussion about Harding County this, Harding County that. And it's kind of a sore spot out there, it seems to me, unless I'm just hearing it wrong. But the mule deer in Harding County are evidently very popular, and we should be looking at that, taking a little, give at least give the commission a little background on it.
Yeah, we sure can, and I can maybe invite one of the regional staff up here. But one thing that's really unique is two things in Harding County. There's an abundance of public land, an opportunity to get on that land, and very healthy mule deer populations. And those two intersect to create a great opportunity. And it's not a secret. And the result is that we have a fair number of folks that are pursuing mule deer in our extreme northwest county, and it's very popular. But if there'd be, if you'd want more detail than that, we could certainly get a member of a regional staff up here to visit with you a little bit more about that.
Mr. Chairman, should Harding County be treated separately in some way? Is what I'm getting at, or how do we handle this?
Mr. Chairman, there'd be two ways to do that. I mean, it certainly could be treated as a county level restrictions. But the core of the issue comes at those on those public lands, and I think the petitioners did a really good job of describing that, what that concentration of hunters is. And if you want to be surgical about it, I mean, there would be restrictions that would be directed specifically at those properties where there is a perceived level of crowding.
So the motion is to deny these three petitions now, recognizing that we are going to get to them shortly, but we will first finish the resident, non-resident effort so that that can be used as we make decisions here, committed to getting to it and getting it done in short order. Right?
That's clear to me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any more comments or questions or... All in favor of the motion, say aye, please.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
We'll work on those resolutions.
Thank you.